Welcome back, listeners. If you're hearing this, you made it through another week. Congratulations. Not everyone can say the same. Tonight's episode isn't about ghosts or demons or things that hide in the shadows. Tonight is about something far more terrifying: the human will to survive, and the unspeakable things we become when that will is tested. So turn off the lights, lock your doors, and whatever you do, don't think too hard about what you would do in their position. Because once you start down that road, there's no coming back. Let's begin. Story 1. I'm 24, work in marketing, and I live alone in a flat in Manchester. That's probably important context for what happened. I mean, I'd been on plenty of dating app dates before. Mostly awkward, sometimes fun, never particularly memorable. So when I matched with David, I didn't think much of it. He seemed normal enough. Nice smile in his photos. Said he worked in IT. We messaged for maybe 2 weeks before he suggested meeting for coffee. The cafe he picked was this little place near Piccadilly Gardens. I got there first, ordered a latte, and sat by the window. When he walked in, he looked exactly like his pictures, which was already a win. He smiled, waved, got himself a cappuccino, and sat down across from me. "Sarah," he said, still smiling, "it's nice to finally meet you." "You too," I said. I was already thinking this might actually go well. We chatted about normal things for the first 20 minutes. Work, the weather, how rubbish the Northern Rail service was, all completely ordinary. Then he leaned back in his chair and said casually, like he was commenting on the temperature, "So how's Pickle doing these days?" I felt something shift in my chest. "Sorry?" "Your cat, Pickle. You've had him, what, 3 years now?" I stared at him. I don't think I mentioned my cat. "Didn't you?" He tilted his head, still smiling. "I must have seen it on your profile." But I knew I hadn't put that on my profile. I'd specifically kept my bio vague. Just my age, my job, a few interests. Nothing about Pickle. Maybe I was being paranoid. Maybe I had mentioned it in our messages and forgotten. "Yeah," I said slowly. "3 years in January." "That's nice," he said. "Bet he loves that spot by your bedroom window. The one that gets the afternoon sun." My heart dropped. "How do you know where?" "Lucky guess." He shrugged, took a sip of his cappuccino. "Most cats like windows, don't they?" I should have left then. Looking back, I realize that was the moment. But I didn't want to seem crazy. I didn't want to be rude. So I stayed, even though my hands were shaking slightly as I picked up my latte. "So," he continued, "your grandmother's maiden name was Whitmore, right? That's quite a distinctive name." The cup nearly slipped from my fingers. "I never told you that." "Sure you did." His smile didn't waver. "We talked about family, remember?" "No," I said firmly. "We didn't." He leaned forward, elbows on the table. "Your flat's nice, by the way. I like what you've done with it. The blue sofa was a good choice, and that print you've got above it, the one with the abstract flowers, very you." Something wasn't right. Something was very, very wrong. "I need to go," I said, standing up so quickly my chair scraped loudly against the floor. A few people looked over. "Already?" David stood too, blocking my path slightly. Not aggressively, just there. "But we're having such a nice time." "Move," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. "Just one more thing." He pulled out his phone, swiped a few times, then turned the screen toward me. "I wanted to show you these." I felt my heart pound so hard, I thought I might be sick. They were photos of me, in my flat, in my bedroom, asleep in my bed, Photo after photo, taken from different angles. Some from weeks ago, I recognized the pajamas I'd worn. Some more recent. In one, Pickle was curled up next to my head. How? I couldn't finish the sentence. My legs felt weak. You should really lock your windows, Sarah, he said softly. Ground floor flats are so easy to access. I mean, I've been visiting for a while now. You sleep so soundly. It's actually quite sweet. I tried to scream, but my throat had closed up. The cafe felt too small, too quiet. Why wasn't anyone noticing this? Don't make a scene, he whispered, stepping closer. I know where you live, obviously. I know your routine. I know you take the 192 bus to work. I know you get home around 6:30 most nights. I know you order Thai food every Friday from that place on Wilmslow Road. I know everything, Sarah. I shoved past him, actually shoved him, and ran. Just bolted out of the cafe, not caring who saw, not caring about my bag still on the chair. I ran until my lungs burned, pulled out my phone, and called 999. The police came. They were sympathetic. They took my statement, looked at the photos I'd managed to screenshot before David had pulled his phone away. They found his profile on the app, but the name was fake. The photos stolen from someone else's social media. They searched my flat and found scratches on my bedroom window frame, signs of forced entry. They dusted for prints. They told me to stay with friends. They said they'd patrol the area, but they never found him. I moved 3 weeks later, different city entirely, Leeds. I changed my phone number, deleted all my social media, got a flat on the third floor with deadbolts and a security system. I've never used a dating app since, obviously. To this day, I still check under my bed before sleeping. I still wake up sometimes, certain I heard a noise, certain someone's watching. I'll never forget the way he smiled when he showed me those photos. Calm, almost proud. Like he was sharing holiday snaps. And sometimes, late at night, I wonder if he knows where I live now. If he's just being patient, waiting. I wish I'd trusted my instincts the moment he said Pickle's name. I should have known. But looking back never changes what happened. I just hope he's not looking forward. Story 2. I'm 23, work at a call center in Manchester. And I thought the worst part of my weekend would be sitting through my mate's wedding in the Lake District. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was happy for Dave, but I wasn't exactly thrilled about the 3-hour drive back to Manchester afterward. My girlfriend Sarah offered to split the driving, so obviously I said yes. We left the reception around 10:30, maybe 11. The roads were mostly empty, which was nice, actually. Sarah was driving first while I messed about on my phone, trying to find a decent playlist. That's when I noticed we had no signal, not even one bar. That's weird, I said. Sarah glanced at her phone in the holder. Mine's dead too. Must be the area. I should have known something was off then. We were on the A591. Not some forgotten back road. There should have been signal. About 20 minutes later, the car started making this grinding noise. Sarah's face went pale in the dashboard light. Please don't, she whispered to the car, like it would listen. It didn't. The engine died completely, and she managed to coast us onto a narrow lay-by before everything went dark. And I mean dark. No streetlights, no houses, nothing. Just trees pressing in on both sides of the road, thick and endless. Brilliant, I muttered, popping the bonnet. Absolutely brilliant. I'm not a car person, you know. I can check the oil, and that's about it. I stood there with my phone torch, staring at the engine like I had any clue what I was looking for. Sarah joined me, hugging herself against the cold. See anything? Yeah, loads of stuff I don't understand. She laughed, but it came out shaky. Should we try calling someone? No signal, remember? Right, maybe if we walk a bit. Looking back, I realize we should have stayed with the car. That's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? But we were young and stupid, so we started walking up the road, phones held high like idiots trying to catch a single bar. That's when I noticed how quiet it was. I felt my heart sink a bit. Not like terrified yet, just uncomfortable. No wind, no birds, no rustling in the trees, nothing. Forests aren't supposed to be that silent. There's always something. This is creepy, Sarah said, her voice barely above a whisper. Don't, I said. You'll freak me out. I'm already freaked out. We walked for maybe 10 minutes. The road curved through the trees, and our car disappeared behind us. Still no signal. I was about to suggest turning back when Sarah grabbed my arm. Did you hear that? I stopped. Hear what? I thought I heard, I don't know, footsteps? Sarah? No, listen. We stood there in the darkness, barely breathing. At first, I heard nothing. Then, there it was. Footsteps, not on the road, in the trees, deliberate, steady, keeping pace with us. Maybe it's a deer, I said, but my voice cracked. Deer don't walk like that. She was right. Whatever was moving through those trees was walking on two legs. I could hear branches snapping, leaves crunching. It wasn't trying to be quiet. We should go back to the car, Sarah said. Yeah, let's go. We turned around and started walking faster. The footsteps in the trees continued, matching our speed. I wanted to run, but something told me that would be worse. Like we'd trigger some kind of chase instinct. Don't look, I whispered. Just keep walking. But Sarah looked. I saw her head turn toward the tree line, and I watched her face change. Her eyes went wide, wider than I thought possible, and all the color drained from her skin. What? I grabbed her. What did you see? Someone standing there. Just standing. Watching us. I didn't want to look. I wish I had trusted my instincts and kept walking. But I looked. There was a figure about 10 meters into the trees. Tall, completely still. I couldn't make out details, but I could see the shape of it, darker than the darkness around it. And I swear, I could feel it staring. We ran. I felt my heart pounding so hard, I thought it would burst. Sarah was faster than me, and I could hear her breathing, panicked and sharp. Behind us, the footsteps in the forest started running too. Branches crashing, something moving fast through the undergrowth. The car! Sarah screamed. It came into view around the bend. We practically threw ourselves at it, yanking the doors open. I fumbled with the keys, dropped them, picked them up. The footsteps reached the edge of the road. I jammed the key in the ignition and turned it. Nothing. Again, nothing. Come on. The engine caught. I didn't even wait for Sarah to close her door properly before I floored it. The car lurched forward, and I didn't care that it was making that grinding noise again. We shot down that forest road, doing 70. Maybe 80. Sarah was crying. I was shaking so badly, I could barely hold the wheel. Did you see it? She kept saying. Did you see its face? No, I lied. I had seen it. Just for a second, when the headlights swept across the tree line as we pulled away. A face that wasn't quite right. Too long, eyes too far apart, mouth open in something that might have been a smile. We drove until we found signal. Until we found a petrol station with lights and people. We sat in the car park for an hour before we could even speak properly. To this day, I still don't drive through the Lake District. Sarah and I broke up a few months later. We couldn't even look at each other without remembering. I moved to Leeds, changed jobs, basically started over. But sometimes, late at night, I'll be walking home from somewhere and I'll realize how quiet it is. No birds, no wind, just silence. And I'll remember those footsteps, matching my pace, watching from the darkness. I never stop to look anymore. I just run. Story 3. I was 16 when it happened, walking home from my part-time job at Tesco in Bristol. It was early October, so the sun was already setting by the time my shift ended at 5:30. Looking back, I realize I should have called my mom for a ride, but I didn't want to seem paranoid. It was only a 20-minute walk, you know. I'd done it dozens of times. The first time I saw the van, I didn't think much of it. White transit van, a bit battered, parked on the corner near the roundabout, the kind you see everywhere in the UK. But as I walked past, I noticed the driver watching me in his side mirror. Not just a glance, proper staring. His eyes were locked on me, unblinking. I felt my stomach tighten, but I kept walking. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, I told myself. He's probably waiting for someone. About 5 minutes later, I heard an engine behind me. I didn't turn around immediately, but when I did, my heart sank. The same white van crawling along the road at walking pace, maybe 15 feet behind me. The street was mostly empty. Just a few parked cars and closed shops. No one else around. I picked up my pace. The van matched my speed. "All right, love?" a voice called out. I glanced over. The driver had rolled down his window. He looked about 40, wearing a dark hoodie, with this weird smile that didn't reach his eyes. "You lost?" "No, I'm fine, thanks," I said, not stopping. My hands were shaking in my jacket pockets. "You sure? It's getting dark. I can give you a lift." He was keeping perfect pace with me now. One hand on the wheel, the other arm hanging out the window. "I'm good, honestly. My house is just up here." I lied, obviously. I still had another 10 minutes of walking through increasingly empty streets. "Come on, don't be like that. It's not safe for a young girl to be walking alone." The way he said, "young girl," made my skin crawl. His eyes opened wider than they should have, like he was trying too hard to look friendly. "I insist." I didn't answer. I just turned down Maple Road, hoping he'd drive off. But the van turned too, mounting the curb slightly with a horrible scraping sound. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it in my ears. That's when I started properly panicking. I mean, I'd read about this stuff online, watched the videos about staying safe. But when it's actually happening to you, your brain sort of freezes. I pulled out my phone with trembling fingers, trying to look like I was calling someone. "Who are you calling?" His voice had changed, less friendly, more aggressive. "I'm just trying to help you, and you're being rude." The van suddenly lurched forward and screeched to a stop directly in front of me, blocking my path. The back doors were facing me. I stopped dead, my entire body going cold. The driver's door opened. I should have trusted my instincts. The moment I saw him staring, I should have run immediately. But I'd wasted time trying not to seem crazy, trying not to be impolite to a strange man who was clearly following me. He stepped out, tall, wearing gloves, in October. The sun was almost completely down now, and the streetlights hadn't come on yet. This stretch of Maple Road was residential, but all the curtains were closed. No one was watching. "Just get in the van," he said, not smiling anymore. "Don't make this difficult." Something in his voice, That flat, matter-of-fact tone made me move. I spun around and ran. Not toward home, but back toward the main road, toward where I knew there'd be people and lights and cameras. I heard his footsteps behind me. Heavy, fast. "Get back here!" he shouted, and I heard something metallic jingling. Keys? Handcuffs? I didn't look back. My lungs were burning. I've never been athletic, and my work shoes weren't made for running, but pure terror kept me going. I could hear the van's engine starting up again behind me, the tires squealing. I saw the Tesco sign glowing in the distance and pushed harder. My phone was still clutched in my hand, and I finally managed to press my mum's number. It rang once, twice. "Hannah, you all right, love?" "Mum." I was sobbing now, still running. "There's a man, a van, he's chasing me." "Where are you?" "Near Tesco. I'm running back. Stay on the main road. I'm calling the police right now. Don't hang up." I burst onto the main road just as the van came around the corner. But there were people here, a couple walking their dog, a group of teenagers smoking outside the off-license. The van slowed, then stopped. Through the windscreen, I saw the driver staring at me. Even from that distance, I could see his expression, cold, calculating. Then he reversed sharply and drove off in the opposite direction. The police came, took my statement, said they'd look for the van, but I never heard anything more about it. Basically, without a license plate number or clearer description, there wasn't much they could do. My mum picks me up from work now. Every single shift, no arguments. I don't walk anywhere alone when it's getting dark, and I probably never will again. Sometimes I have nightmares about those back doors of the van opening, about what might have been inside. To this day, I still see white transit vans everywhere. And every time I feel my heart drop, just for a second, I wonder if he's still out there, still driving around, still looking. I wonder if anyone else got into that van. I hope not. I'll never forget his eyes in that mirror, watching me, like I was something he was hunting.